9 o'clock on a Thursday night. It is time for the Earth First Update, all the environmental news you can use. Let's start out with some announcements. The California Native Plant Society, Santa Cruz County Chapter Habitat Restoration Team is going to be having their Saturday restoration this Saturday, March 6th, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Quail Hollow Ranch County Park. A last chance to get out and do some broom bashing. They will continue working along the trails under the live oak canopies, removing invasive non-native Genista monspezulana, or French broom, as we all know it so fondly. We've had a tremendous volunteer turnout this year and hope this day will be no exception. Plenty of recent rain will make pulling easy. So get out and pull, pull, pull. A spring feeling is in the air, so come on out and get a peek at some early native blooms. How to get there? Go up Graham Hill Road. When you come to the light in Felton, that's the first one. Turn right, go up a couple of miles, turn left on East Ziani Road, go about a half a mile to the park entrance on this on Quail Hollow Road, and then meet in the gravel parking lot on the left side of the entrance road. The Habitat Restoration Team is an all-volunteer group working to restore native habitats in the parks and protected lands of Santa Cruz County. Their program provides an opportunity for people to learn about the natural systems that surround them while helping to restore special and wild places. No prior work experience is necessary. Just show up at the park. They welcome individual volunteers from 8 to 80. Wear comfortable layered clothing, bring something to drink, and lots of enthusiasm. They work rain or shine. But if things get particularly unpleasant, they call it a day. Tools are provided. Bring your gloves and some water. For more information, contact their program leader, Linda. Her number, 831-462-4041. That's 462-4041. Or get in touch with her by email at REDWDRN. That's redwoodnurse@pacbell.net. redwoodrn@pacbell.net. Or go to www.cruisecnps.org for more information on their local website there. And a two-year fishing ban is an attempt to save Alameda Creek trout in this story by Peter Fimwright of the Chronicle. The steelhead trout have pretty much vanished from Alameda Creek, so state officials decided it was time to ban fishing. Sport fishing will be closed for at least 2 years, starting March 1st, downstream from the San Antonio, Calaveras, and Del Valle reservoirs, which typically supply about 15% of San Francisco's water supply. The decision, approved in December by the California Fish and Game Commission, is an attempt to protect threatened steelhead trout and remnant populations of native rainbows in San Francisco Bay's third largest tributary behind the Sacramento and San Joaquin Rivers. And that's good news there. And here's a couple of steps you can take to stop expansion of bear hunting across California. Please urge the California Fish and Game Commission to reject plans to dramatically expand bear hunting throughout the state. The deadline for public comments is March 13th. Every year, more than 2,000 bears are legally killed by hunters across California. An estimated 40,000 to 50,000 black bears are legally hunted each year in the United States and Canada, while an unknown number are also illegally poached. Surprisingly, it is even legal for trophy hunters in California to chase bears with packs of hounds. To make matters worse, the California Department of Fish and Game has proposed dramatically expanding bear hunting across the state earlier this month. California Department of Fish and Game unveiled its plans to increase the hunt quota from 1,700 to 2,500 bears, or to eliminate the cap altogether and expand hunting into other areas of the state, including San Luis Obispo County. The agency also plans to allow the use of global positioning system collars and treeing switches on dogs while bear hunting. The treeing switch alerts hunters when hounds have chased a bear up a tree. The California Fish and Game Commission will ultimately decide to accept or reject the department's proposals. If these proposals are adopted, bears will have virtually no place to hide in California. What can you do? Contact the California Fish and Game Commission. Their email address, fgc@fgc.ca.gov. That's fgc@fgc.ca.gov. Give them a call, 916-653-4899. That's 916-653-4899, or fax them, 916-653-5040. That fax number is 916-653-5040. Their mailing address, California Fish and Game Commission, 1416 9th Street. Or P.O. Box 944209 at Sacramento, California, 94244-2090. Once again, that address, California Fish and Game Commission, 1416 9th Street, or P.O. Box 944209, Sacramento, California, 94244-2090. And want to thank bigwildlife.org for that notice. So I'll get those cards and letters out to the Fish and Game Commission. And a huge hydroelectric dam has been approved in Brazil's Amazon. In this story reported by Rodrigo Viga Gaye, writing by Peter Murphy, editing by Raymond Collett and Margarita Choi, Brazil's government has granted an environmental license for construction of a controversial hydroelectric dam in the heart of the Amazon rainforest, the Environment Minister of Brazil said. $17 billion project on the Xingu River in the northern state of Pará is to help the fast-growing Latin American country cope with soaring demand for electricity, but has raised concern over its likely impact on the environment and the native Indians. It may have been the slowest and most complicated process under my management. After all, it is the third largest in the world and a very controversial project, Environment Minister Carlos Mink told reporters in Rio de Janeiro. The 11,000 megawatt or 11 gigawatt Belo Monte Dam is part of Brazil's largest concerted development plan for the Amazon since the country's military government cut highways through the rainforest to settle the vast region during its two-decade reign started in 1964. Dams, roads, gas pipelines, power grids worth more than $30 billion are being built to tap the region's vast raw materials and transport its agricultural products in coming years. Mink said 250 square kilometers, about 100 square miles of land, would be flooded by the Belo Monte Dam, and that this had been reduced from the 5,000 square kilometers in the original plans for ecological reasons. Environmental groups say the Belo Monte project, which also includes creating a waterway to transport agricultural commodities grown in the Amazon, would damage the sensitive ecosystem with the flooding and threaten some fish species. Rockstar and environmental activist Sting traveled to Brazil in November to call for more debate over the building of the dam. The head of the indigenous Kayapo population, Chief Raoni Zakarame, said he feared the dam would affect areas where his kin lived. Among the utilities wanting to build and operate the dam are Brazil's state-run Eletrobras. The winning bidder will have to pay R$1.5 billion, about $803 million, to create national parks, help monitor forests, and benefit communities affected by the dam. Mink was to present details of the environmental license later on in the day. And scant Arctic ice could mean summer double whammy in this story by Deborah Zabarenko and editing by Mohamed Zargam. Scant ice over the Arctic Sea this winter could mean a double whammy of powerful ice melt next summer, said top U.S. climate scientist. It's not that the ice keeps melting, it's just not growing very fast, said Mark Cerise, director of the U.S. National Snow and Ice Data Center. In January, Arctic ice grew by about 13,000 square miles, or 34,000 square kilometers, a day, which is a bit more than one-third of the pace of ice growing during the 1980s, and less than the average for the first decade of the 21st century. Arctic ice cover is important to the rest of the world because the Arctic is the globe's biggest weather maker, sometimes dubbed the Earth's air conditioner, for its ability to cool down the planet. More melting Arctic sea ice could affect this weathermaking process. It is unlikely to lead to rising sea levels any more than an ice cube melting in a glass of water would make the glass overflow. But if Arctic ice fails to build up sufficiently during the dark, cold winter months, it is likely to melt faster and earlier when spring comes, Cerez said by telephone from Colorado. We've grown back ice in the winter, but that ice tends to be thin, and that's the problem, he said. You set yourself up for a world of hurt in the summer. The ice that is there is also thinner than it was before, and thinner ice simply takes less energy to melt out the next summer. And with less of the Arctic Sea covered with ice in winter, and the existing ice thinner and more fragile than before, we've got a double whammy going on, Sirius said. This more perishable thin ice is prone to early melting, and when it does, the heat-reflecting light-colored sea ice is replaced by heat-absorbing dark-colored ocean water, which accelerates spring and summer melting in the Arctic. This winter, there were unusually warm December temperatures in the Arctic due to a weather pattern known as the Arctic Oscillation, so ice grew more slowly than normal. In January, that pattern shifted to produce cooler Arctic temperatures. The ice extent, the area the ice covers, was below normal over much of the Atlantic sector, including the Barents Sea, part of the East Greenland Sea, and in the Davis Strait. There was above average ice extent in the Pacific side of the Bering Sea, the National Snow and Ice Data Center reported. The last 3 years, 2007, 8, and 9, had the lowest level of ice extent since satellite records began in 1979. Here's an action alert. The National Park Service plans to build a cabin in the Katmai Wilderness in Alaska. The National Park Service is expediting public comments on an ill-advised proposal to construct a 12-by-20-foot cabin at Shwikshak Bay in the Katmai Wilderness in Alaska. National Park Service has set the deadline for comments on March 3rd, unfortunately yesterday, so it can utilize funding made available through the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, or the Economic Stimulus Bill. The cabin is intended to support ranger patrols and the scientific and recreational purposes of the wilderness, although the NPS admits there are no existing legislative exceptions to the Wilderness Act or the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act allowing construction of this cabin. They claim the cabin meets the minimum required necessary for administration of the wilderness. A rundown cabin built prior to the wilderness designation remains at the proposed cabin site. That cabin was built by the Alaska Department of Fish and Game to support a clam study. It is no longer used for that purpose, nor is it used by National Park Service rangers patrolling the area. Currently, rangers use tents set up inside an electric fence. The fence keeps the brown bears away from camp, negating the claim that a cabin is needed for safety. The proposed action violates the letter and spirit of the Wilderness Act and will degrade the Katmai Wilderness. It represents an all-too-common spread of permanent structures and other administrative facilities in the wilderness, justified by a flawed rationalization. National Park Service policies require that park visitors need to accept wilderness on its own unique terms, including possible dangers from wildlife, weather conditions, physical features, and other natural phenomena. National Park Service managers should set an example for these visitors to follow. I'm sure the National Park Service would like to hear from you, even though their proposed deadline was yesterday. So please contact the National Park Service and tell them no more cabins in the Katmai. For further information, contact wildernesswatch.org. And we apologize for the lateness of that. I didn't notice that last week that it had a deadline on it, but I'm sure they want to hear from you. And let's take some time out for biological diversity news. The center petitions to stop frankenfish chemicals to protect a wide variety of animals as well as humans from poisoning by hormone-altering drugs. The Center for Biological Diversity submitted a scientific petition to the Environmental Protection Agency to regulate endocrine-disrupting chemicals under the Clean Water Act. Endocrine disruptors, chemicals that interfere with the body's endocrine system, which regulates growth, metabolism, and tissue function, can damage reproductive organs and offspring and cause developmental and immune problems in humans and wildlife, including endangered species like the California red-legged frog and the desert pupfish. But as the human population grows and our chemical use increases, more and more of these chemicals are being introduced to wildlife habitats and drinking water through pharmaceutical drugs, pesticides, cosmetics, detergents, deodorants, and a myriad of other substances. The center's petition calls for the EPA to adopt sensible limits that will eliminate or drastically and dramatically reduce these scary chemicals in U.S. waterways. And studies have shown that Alaska polar bears and walrus are in peril. Responding to a court order spurred by a Center for Biological Diversity lawsuit last month, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service finished long overdue reports confirming that polar bears in Alaska are declining and that Pacific walrus are under threat. Both species are suffering from the loss of their sea ice habitat to global warming, oil and gas development, and unsustainable hunting. The science is in, and it shows that Alaska's polar bears and walrus are in big trouble, said Rebecca Noblin with the Center's Climate Law Institute. There is no longer any excuse to delay action to protect these great Arctic mammals. Without their sea ice habitat, America's polar bears and walrus are doomed. And a sneaky sea slug is part animal and part plant. That's right, it's an animal, it's a plant. It's the Elysia chlorotica sea bug. Yes, biologists have just announced that this species of green sea slug, an animal, of course, is also part plant. From the algae they eat, Elysia chlorotica slugs have stolen the DNA to produce the plant pigment chlorophyll, as well as the tiny cell parts called chloroplasts that plants use to conduct photosynthesis and get energy from the sun. The slugs can actually go their whole lives without eating as long as they're in the sun for 12 hours a day, and they've eaten enough algae to steal the chloroplasts they need. No one's quite sure how the slugs actually appropriate the plant genes, but they've been proven to do so well that they can actually pass the genes on to baby slugs. And in other biological diversity news, a victory for jaguars, Obama pledges recovery plan and habitat protection. Capping a 13-year battle to save American jaguar from extinction, the Center for Biological Diversity has won a decision from the Obama administration to develop a recovery plan and protect essential habitat for North America's largest and most endangered cat. The Bush administration has twice declared that it would not recover, reintroduce, or do anything to protect jaguars in the United States. Twice, the center's legal team filed suit and struck down the illegal decisions. This left the final decision up to Obama, but until the last moment, we were uncertain he would do the right thing, as he has not made endangered species a priority to date. Now the Obama administration has committed to developing a federal recovery plan and mapping out the jaguar's critical habitat. The long, hard work of saving the American jaguar can begin. And 14 endangered birds have earned U.S. protection. As a result of the Center for Biological Diversity's lawsuit, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has completed a rule to protect two endangered birds native to Galapagos and Papua New Guinea under the Endangered Species Act. The Galapagos petrel, a dark-rumped seabird known as to the Galapagos Island natives as web-footed one, is most seriously threatened by introduced predators and farm animals that tear up its habitat. The Heinroth's shearwater, an elusive bird thought to breed in Papua New Guinea and nearby Solomon Islands, is also threatened by non-native predators. Its habitat is being destroyed by deforestation as well as commercial fishing operations. And also in response to center legal work, the Fish and Wildlife Service has proposed to protect 12 birds from Peru, Bolivia, Europe, and French Polynesia. And the green sturgeon has gained protection from fishing. Following the Center for Biological Diversity's successful work to protect the southern green sturgeon under the Endangered Species Act, the California Fish and Game Commission has voted to close a big stretch of the species' primary spawning grounds in the upper Sacramento River to all sturgeon fishing. That means starting March 1st, adult green sturgeon, down to critically low numbers, can no longer be fished in the deep holes they like to hide in after reproducing in the river. This closure will also benefit white sturgeon reproduction. Work will also start soon on major fish passage projects at the Red Bluff Diversion Dam, an impediment to green sturgeon and salmon migration in the upper Sacramento. The last straw for dammed fish came in 2007 when dam gates crushed a significant number of spawning green sturgeon. The new fish passage project will replace the gates by 2012, greatly improving migration for endangered sturgeon, salmon, and steelhead. And yes, the feds have said the manatee needs more habitat, but no, we won't grant it. In a response to a petition by the center and allies, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service announced that the endangered Florida manatee indeed needs new federal habitat protections, but put off actually granting those protections indefinitely, since critical habitat was set aside for the manatee more than three decades ago. A vast body of science has shown that the mild-mannered mammal needs more and different areas protected, and the feds can't ignore that need. Instead, they're saying they won't take action to save the manatee until they get more funding to do it. But with Florida's population blowing up, the last stand of precious manatee habitat could be developed or destroyed by boat propeller damage, dams, pollution, marine debris, and other threats. Last year was the deadliest year on record for manatees, with a total of 429 deaths and a record 97 killed by collisions with boats. The decision to withhold critical habitat protection puts the Florida manatee in an administrative purgatory, said Center Oceans Director Miyoko Sakashita. Endangered species don't have time to wait for bureaucracy. And a uranium victory, feds have been ordered to release hidden documents. In a big win for water and wildlife, a federal judge ruled that the Center for Biological Diversity and Allies can obtain previously protected records relating to a 42-square-mile uranium leasing program in the Dolores and San Miguel Rivers in western Colorado and eastern Utah. In July 2008, the center and three partners sued the U.S. Department of Energy and Bureau of Land Management for approving the uranium program without fully analyzing its environmental impacts, which would be substantial. In fact, uranium mining and milling from the program will deplete Colorado River Basin water and threaten to pollute streams and rivers with toxic and radioactive waste products, in turn threatening wildlife and human communities downstream, as well as four already endangered Colorado River fish species, the razorback sucker, Colorado pike minnow, the humpback and bony tail chubs. Because of the ruling, the center will now be able to get inside information on individual uranium leases to use in our suit against the entire program. And Lake Mead species are threatened by frankenfish chemicals. For the sake of endangering fish, human health, and the cleanliness of our largest reservoir in the United States, the Center for Biological Diversity submitted comments opposing the continued pollution of Lake Mead with endocrine-disrupting chemicals. The Nevada Division of Environmental Protection plans to allow the city of North Las Vegas to discharge 25 million gallons of effluent, meaning shit, into the Las Vegas Wash and Lake Mead per day. That waste matter is chock full of endocrine disruptors, chemicals that interfere with the body's endocrine system, which regulate growth, metabolism, and tissue function, and can damage reproductive organs and offspring and cause developmental and immune problems in wildlife and humans alike. Imperiled fish barely holding on in Lake Mead, like the razorback sucker, are especially at risk. The center submitted a scientific petition to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency to regulate endocrine disruption pollution nationwide, and we read that one earlier. Bug sickles and antifreeze, how insects survive in winter. Birds have migration, bears have hibernation, humans have heaters and houses. But have you ever wondered how furless, featherless insects endure sub-freezing temperatures so they can live to crawl, jump, and fly another year? Some insects, like the monarch butterfly, migrate just as birds do, while others burrow underground or hide out in the bottoms of lakes. But believe it or not, other insects actually produce antifreeze in their bodies, like the snow flea, which can be found hopping about all winter on snowbanks in temperatures as low as 20 degrees Fahrenheit. Other insects just go ahead and freeze, but come spring they thaw out and they're as good as new. The Alaska upis beetle freezes at about minus 19 degrees, but can survive even when the temperature plummets to minus 100. I wonder how they figured that out. Probably put it in a freezer. Darn scientists. Could these insect innovations be the key to long-term human organ preservation? Either way, the sweaters and puffy jackets in our closets suddenly seem a little less cool. No pun intended. And a lawsuit has been launched to fight a massive Minnesota mine. The Center for Biological Diversity and Partners sent a notice of intent to sue mining company Cliffs Erie over its fouling of waters surrounding a proposed copper mine in northeastern Minnesota. The company's own reports document myriad ongoing violations of water quality laws caused by past mining. Plans for a newly proposed copper mine, the first of its kind in the state, are to pile its own tailings on top of those from former taconite mines that are already polluting ground and surface waters, waters that ultimately make their way to Lake Superior. The new mine would process more than 225 million tons of ore at the processing facility using a tailings basin already known to be leaking. Before the state even considers the approval of a new wave of mining in northeastern Minnesota, it should first require that mining companies clean up the pollution from past aconite mines, said Center staff attorney Mark Fink. As we all learned as kids, you should clean up one mess before making another one. And emergency petitions have been filed to close caves and stop bat diseases. With white nose syndrome having killed 1 million bats across 9 states, the Center for Biological Diversity has filed 2 new petitions to slow the spread of the deadly bat disease and grant federal protection to 2 bats at risk of prompt extinction. The first petition asks federal agencies to restrict visitor access into all bat caves under federal jurisdiction until or unless it can be proven that people don't play a part in spreading white nose syndrome. Careful exceptions to restricted access would be made for essential activities like ongoing research on the bat disease or activities ensuring human safety. Our second petition requests Endangered Species Act protection for the eastern small-footed bat and the northern long-eared bat, both hard hit by white nose syndrome, and both of which already perilously rare before the disease struck. Last year, the center's work compelled the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to draft a plan for managing white nose syndrome, but much more needs to be done, and fast. And protection has been sought for the yellow-legged frog. The Center for Biological Diversity petitioned to list all populations of the hardy but highly imperiled mountain yellow-legged frog under the California Endangered Species Act. Because of a center petition, the frog's Sierra Nevada population is now a candidate for federal protection, but only the Southern California population actually enjoys a place on the endangered species list. And all the species populations need protection, seriously threatened as they are by introduced trout, disease, pesticides, and habitat changes from global warming, drought, and grazing. Since the center settled a lawsuit to defend the frog from its primary threat, fish stalking, in 2008, California Fish and Game Commission has taken steps to reduce non-native trout in the yellow-legged frog's home streams, but the amphibian is still hurt by stocked trout and desperately needs state protection in the absence of federal safeguards. And the Inspector General has ruled killing of the last U.S. jaguar was a crime, confirming our worst fears and supporting our lawsuit against the Arizona Game and Fish Department. The Inspector General's office last week released its long-awaited investigation into the death of Macho B, the last known American jaguar, originally requested by the Center and Congressman Raul Grijalva, Democrat from Arizona. The report concluded that the state agency lacked the necessary permits to capture jaguars, that its employees and contractors appeared to have purposely and criminally captured Macho B, and that it intimidated federal biologists who were concerned about the agency's reckless behavior. It also concluded that critical evidence was destroyed because a key U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service decision-maker ordered a cosmetic necropsy without knowing what the word necropsy means. That's when you cut them open after they're dead. As a result of Fish and Game's bungling, Macho B was killed in 2009. The center has sued the agency to prevent additional capturing and killing of jaguars. And California salmon are to be protected from water pumping. Following a notice from the Center for Biological Diversity and Allies, California is beginning to process to regulate excessive vineyard water diversions to protect imperiled salmon in the Russian River watershed. Vineyards pump water for grapes from streams that are the spawning grounds of federally protected coho salmon, Chinook, and steelhead trout. Vineyards not only draw water during warm weather, they also pump for frost protection for budding grapes during the winter. When freezing temperatures hit the North Coast, vineyard pumping can actually dry up portions of the Russian River and its tributaries, stranding and killing baby salmon. The California Water Resources Board has recommended that any diversion of water from the Russian River watershed must be monitored to ensure that it doesn't dry up salmon and steelhead habitat, and a water management plan for the basin is underway to regulate pumping. The board declined to take an emergency action needed to protect salmon this winter, but its move is a critical first step. And the center has cruised to court to save 83 corals. To save our country's rainforests above the sea from global warming and ocean acidification, the Center for Biological Diversity has filed a notice of intent to sue the feds for failing to respond to our petition to protect 83 ailing corals in U.S. waters. Scientists warn that in just a few decades, all the world's coral reefs and their amazing biodiversity could be lost. When corals are stressed by high ocean temperatures, they're vulnerable to mass bleaching events and death. And when water chemistry is changed by carbon dioxide-driven ocean acidification, corals lose their ability to build the protective skeletons they need to survive. But since the center filed a scientific petition for Endangered Species Act safeguards for 83 most imperiled U.S. corals last October, and as reported on Earth First Update, there's been no word from the National Marine Fisheries Service. The center won federal protection for elkhorn and staghorn corals, the first species to be protected under the act due to global warming in 2006. Now 83 other corals need our help. As Center Oceans Director Miyoko Sakashida put it, timing is of the essence to reverse the tragic decline of these vitally important reefs, and we can't afford any delays. And we want to thank the Center for Biological Diversity for all these biological diversity news updates, and we still have a pile of them to go through. For more information, visit their website at www.biologicaldiversity.org. And unfortunately, that's it for the Earth First Update for this week. If you'd like to hear a podcast or download a podcast of this broadcast, please go to www.h2opodcast.com. That's h2opodcast.com. When you get there, click on Earth and select Earth First Radio. And we want to thank the folks at h2opodcast.com for recording and archiving these shows for our listeners. Earth First Update is presented every Thursday evening live at 9 o'clock here on Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 FM and www.freakradio.org. And Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm Uncle Dennis, and I want to thank you for tuning in to Earth First Update. Tune in again next week at 9 o'clock on a Thursday night for another Earth First Update.